Welcome to a hardware episode of Software Gone Wild. This sounds weird, right? But those of you who have been listening to my OpenFlow rants know that I always talk about the limitations of physical switches. One of the limitations is that none of the switches, apart from HP's switches, have fall to normal rule in OpenFlow. So HP so far seems to be like the only or one of few vendors, because I don't look into what startups are doing, that can actually recycle the packet and match it with OpenFlow first and then with the regular pipeline. There's this problem called recirculation, because if you're matching the packet in OpenFlow, you may be too late to do a full layer 2 and layer 3 lookup. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, hey, you really should go and watch my OpenFlow seminar. Anyway. The other thing I'm talking about constantly is how the table sizes on the switches are limited, which we all know they are, but some pundits just don't get it. And how it's hard to send packets from the switch to the controller if you invested 20 cents in the switch's CPU. Now, luckily, Chris, stop laughing.
Okay,
so I spilled
cents.
The beans.
It's nice to see someone else who is as cynical as I am and actually gets it.
So with me is Chris Young from HP and Craig Mills from HP. And we'll talk about what HP is doing on the hardware side of their OpenFlow implementation. So we'll get as nerdy as possible, I hope. You've both been on my podcast before, but just in case people have missed that, and if you have missed that, HP is doing some great things in campus with SDN and OpenFlow, so go and listen to that podcast. Anyway, what are you guys doing at HP?
So my name's Greg Mills. I'm a global product line manager. That's supposed to mean I find out what customers want and get R&D to do it, specifically on SDN and ASICs.
So, and my name's Chris Young, at Netman Chris on Twitter, and I am a consulting technical marketing engineer, which means I'm supposed to translate nerd speak back into business value. Yeah. Someone's got to do it.
I know. I feel so sorry for you. You're such a good guy.
Yeah, I recently got described as apparently that I get to have drinks and talk to engineers for a living, so it's not a bad gig.
Okay.
Yeah.
Getting engineers drunk, is it?
No, that's... there's some tasks I wouldn't even try. Right?
Okay, so let's move to hardware. I mean, the non-fluid hardware.
So let's... I like to start this conversation really... Whenever I describe it to people, it's really difficult to grasp pipelines.
Okay.
And so...
If we can stop before that, I want
to...
I want to go before your before. So when you look at SDN in general, and a lot of the stuff's going on, typically the entire... The Twitterverse, everybody's talking SDN, and you automatically go to vSwitch.
Yes.
Some kind of a vSwitch, right? And the reason that you're doing that is because in a data center environment, you've got incredibly bad table sizes as far as the flows that you're trying to use. So campus is a whole different environment. We have no vSwitch to play with, right? And that's something that I want people thinking in their heads before we even get into the table sizes and pipeline conversations, because we can't punt it out to an Intel CPU. That's not an option in the campus. So before we even start, I think let's set the playing
baseline.
Field there. Yeah, let's set the baseline.
Okay. So we have to do it in silicon, and so I really like to bring people back to OpenFlow 1.0 because it had a single table, and what that was is basically it was a bunch of matches and a bunch of actions, and that was how you talked to the switch. One table, you get to mix and match, that was it.
Okay, so to simplify that,
yeah.
A packet comes in, you have a single opportunity to match on something.
Yeah.
And then you can set the output port, or you can drop the packet, or you can set a few fields like rewrite the MAC address or rewrite the SCP bit.
I pull back from that.
Okay.
So switches, traditional ASICs is what I would call them, they have a pipeline. They have a series of operations they do on a packet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't generally rewrite source IP. Like, it's just not a normal action for a switch.
No, they rewrite destination MAC. That's the only thing they can do.
But they don't do it as a block operation. Mm-hmm. It's part of another pipeline, of a forwarding pipeline, the L2.
Okay.
And so to actually get that action, you have to program a different table, which is the Mac Learn table. And so it ends up being this roundabout way you can get these all these actions. But with OpenFlow 1.0, it's all the ASICs are tuned to do normal networking. That's the way to think about it. So L2, DSCP, dropping, perfect. Line rate, no issues. Anything that starts to be unnatural acts,
Not going to happen. To rephrase that,
yeah.
In a typical switch, you would have a pipeline where you would have an input echo on a port, and you may have PBR on an input port.
Exactly.
And then you would do layer 2 lookup, and if the layer 2 lookup happens to be pointing to your layer 3 table, because it's your MAC address, you do layer 3 lookup.
Yes.
And in the layer 3 lookup, you identify the next hop, and that next hop is associated with an output interface and the MAC address.
Exactly.
And you might have more than one output interface if you have ECMP on that destination.
Exactly.
And then when you know what the output interface is, you go with the packet to the output interface and you might have another echo table on the output interface. And this is the pipeline that we're talking about, and this is what's in every silicon out there.
Exactly.
And what's really the most important thing to understand about that is this is an order of operations that's set in stone. It's immutable.
It's in silicon.
Well, it's set in silicon. You know, if I had to explain it to my mom, you know, you have parentheses, then you do exponents, right? It's math. It's order of operations.
Yeah.
You can't change that.
Yeah. Right. So there's nothing you can do to change this thing.
Yeah. And so when you... The OpenFlow 1.0... Having that single table, it was really an odd conversation because you could match on some things, but that doesn't mean you could change it because it depended what table, where in that pipeline you were matching on.
Okay, or so, to rephrase that, you could change something, but then the OpenFlow agent on the switch would have to be smart enough to say, okay, I have to install the matching rule in TCAM because you're matching on source IP address, which I can only do in TCAM. And you want to rewrite destination MAC address, which I can only do in the layer 3 lookup table at the end of the layer 3 lookup, which means that I have to fake entries through all these pipelines so that I connect the input TCAM to the output ECMP group table, just so that you idiot could match on the source IP address and set destination MAC address. And why would you ever want to do that, idiot?
Just let me do it. I already know how to do it. Yeah, exactly. And so it's really complicated piece of software to actually get that to work.
Yeah.
And so the ONF, I'm not sure who's responsible. Thank you, or maybe not thank you. We'll get into why. Comes up with a multi-table model. So now vendors can better represent their pipeline. And so now I can define this table does these matches and these actions in that table, this table, and it forwards into this next table that has this set of matches and actions. And now I can better, it's basically a model of the ASIC pipeline. Right? I can better model my ASIC, which is great, but everybody's ASIC is slightly different.
Yes.
And now you've
And don't get me even explosion. Started on how incomprehensibly complex
Proger
documentation on OpenFlow pipelines is, because I tried to decode it once and I was like, no, I'm out of here.
Yeah, the one thing Proger does, I think because of our early work with Stanford, we have a software implementation and a hardware implementation.
Yeah.
And so once you go past table 200, we punt to software, and that lets us get... It's almost like a vSwitch, right? We get a lot of... It's a software implementation.
Yeah, wonderful performance.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
That's not a data path.
Yeah.
You want to be very selective about the traffic you put in table 200. But it's there for the ultimate flexibility. So that's the existing switch capabilities.
Yeah, just to put multi-tables a bit more in perspective, you listeners haven't heard about this thing, go and read my blog post on why OpenFlow 1.3 is really important. Namely, if you try to do two things at once, you're matching on packet on port 80, and you're trying to match on destination IP address and send it through an output port. These are two independent operations.
Yeah.
And if you try to do two independent things in one table, you have to list all possible combinations of one thingy and the other thingy.
Yeah.
Or so-called Cartesian product for people who actually got some math in high school. And that just explodes the table size. And do keep in mind that we were talking about matching these things in TCAM.
Yes.
Which is the input ECHL / PBR table. Now go and look up the data sheet of your switch and see how big that table is.
Especially in a campus environment.
Yes.
Yeah.
TCAMs are expensive. They suck power and they suck. Yeah. Okay, so that's the state of the world at the moment. There's a few other specialty chipsets out there that don't really do traditional networking. They do, you know, all they are is staged TCAM.
Like,
and they
cheap,
cost,
right?
And they cost accordingly.
They're reassuringly expensive.
Yes. So one of the products we're launching at Interop is a V3 blade. It's our sixth generation ASIC, and I have the unique position of doing SDN and ASICs, so I get to muck with our pipeline, so to speak. And this, I can't take credit for this. This was done before I got onto ASICs, but it's pretty sweet.
What a lot of people probably don't realize is that HP actually spin our own ASICs in the ProVision, at least in the upper field of, you know, the lower ones. Yeah, we'll use merchant silicon just like everybody else. But for most of the ProVision, 3500, 54s, 2920s, 3800s, and
54s.
These are actually custom ASICs.
These are the ProCurve switches.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And the thing is, you got from 3Com, that's all merchant silicon, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's any exceptions there.
No.
So we are more or less talking about campus switches here.
Yes.
Yes.
Not the data center line.
No.
No.
Okay.
So in the new V3 ASIC, which is launching now, there's a bunch of form factors. I think 40 gig dual port. So these are half slot blades.
So this would be the slide-in blades for existing high-end modular ProCurve switches.
Yeah, the 5400R. Okay. So,
so one really quick thing, because so when I came into HP, this is something that kind of went, what do you mean it's a 12-slot switch? It doesn't make any sense to me. So it's 12 times 48? No, we count by half slots. So left, right, so we actually 12, which in if
which
you
is
translate
like six.
This... Which is like six, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it does afford you a little more flexibility,
mm-hmm.
right?
Of
because,
course.
You know, so, but it's just something to make sure that when we're talking a 12-slot switch, it's a 6 times 48 port.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that you started complicating my life.
Yeah. It's just math.
I know you like details.
Yeah, sure, I love it. Let's get that one straight. So you have this chassis switch, and it has slots.
Yes.
You put in line cards.
Yes.
And now you have next generation ASIC on one of these line cards.
Yeah, 10 different modules of it, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. So you have
10
a
different
whole
line cards. Yeah.
Family of new yes. line cards. And no, I don't want to know the details of the port count.
Right.
I want to know the ASIC details.
Exactly.
So you have an input line card, which is the new generation. You have the output line card, which is the new generation. And are they connected with a backplane or a fabric?
Fabric.
So you have a fabric in the background.
Yeah.
So you have input pipeline on the input line card.
Mm-hmm.
Send it to the fabric. You have output pipeline on the output line card.
Yes.
So you have this distributed system of ASICs.
Yes.
And how do you program that with OpenFlow?
All of our forwarding decisions are made on the ingress ASIC.
Okay.
And so the egress ASIC just does a little bit of back pressure. That's about it. That's the level of tweaking.
So all the fun stuff is done on ingress.
Ingress, yeah.
Then you know what the output port is.
Yes.
You have to fight for the fabric. You get across. You go straight into the output port. So no output echo on the output line card.
There's the ASIC has egress ACLs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's about it that you hit on the egress.
Yeah, and then you get the back pressure through the fabric saying, "Hey,
slow
I
down,
can't take
down.
Well drop packets. I can't take them anymore."
Yeah. So each line card's got a 80 gig one directional, so 160, depending on whose math you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
And those are half slots, so mm-hmm. you know, 320 for a slot. I think that's all non-blocking.
Yeah, I think so.
You still get congestion, but...
if you have an OpenFlow rule that refers to input interface, you can install that only on one of the ASICs. And if you have an OpenFlow rule that does not refer to an input interface, you have to install it on all of the ASICs.
I think all of our rules, I don't know if you need VLAN in all of them, but you can, if you don't span every card with, if the VLAN doesn't span all cards, then you can make some optimizations, but yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if we've covered this. Yeah, the operation, the unit, the grouping unit that we use for OpenFlow in the provision is per VLAN based. So we'll take a VLAN, and that will constitute into a DPID from an OpenFlow standpoint.
Mm-hmm. We actually can group VLANs too.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people who group VLANs do some weird bit mask, but we already have a layer of abstraction between the two, so you can take whatever VLAN you want, 10, 25, 100, and put them in the same OpenFlow instance.
So, by definition, if you're not doing anything else, every VLAN becomes an OpenFlow instance.
You could, yes.
You could, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a selective. Yeah, I think VLAN 10.
Which would mean like a different OpenFlow switch.
Yeah. Yes, so a DPID, a data path identifier.
Yeah.
So when you start looking, this from a management standpoint, it starts to mess with your brain because you're looking at one physical switch.
Which has many virtual switches in it.
Yes. You can, I think.
Sounds like KVM and OpenStack.
128 virtual switches, I think, is what we support on at least the 38s.
No, we do. I think the bottleneck is the number of controllers you can point them at.
Yeah.
And so I think, I'm not sure if we support more than 16 or 32 controllers.
Yeah, it's one of those. Really? Yes. Why did you do that? Because we have the ability to have more DPIDs than ports.
Okay.
So it's future capacity? I don't know.
So that's not the ASIC. Mm-hmm. That's all the software.
Yeah.
So let's
go back to the ASIC. Sorry.
Yeah. So... So as we talked before, almost everyone has implemented, using traditional ASICs, they implement OpenFlow in the TCAM. It's got the most flexibility, it's got the most breadth, and you get a lot of capability at speed. So that's great. Problem with that is the number of entries and the action sets you get out of that. You just don't have the rewrites.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no other way to get around this. It's going to take a few iterations, everybody. It's just a different way of doing pipelines. Today, the conversation that happens between the controller and the switch is the switch talks to the controller. The controller says, "Hey, what's your TTP? What are your table descriptions?"
Mm-hmm.
And the switch sends back, "These are my tables, and these are what I can do in each table." And the controller says, "Okay." What we've done in the V3 ASICs is the controller can say, "Hey, switch, these are your tables," and the switch says, "Okay. I'm good."
That is non-standard, right?
It's the same message. It's just pushing instead of pulling.
Can you?
You can send it empty or you can send it full.
So you can send the table specs to the switch.
Yeah.
So I missed that in the OpenFlow specs. Okay.
Before,
I thought those were read-only.
Well, before it never made sense to you because the pipeline is immutable.
Why would you? I thought that according to OpenFlow 1.3. those things were read-only, that you couldn't set them. But, okay, I understand what you're doing. So, okay.
And so...
So, to make things a little bit clearer, because now we are really getting
it.
I still get it, but... So, hey guys, if you don't get this, there's this OpenFlow webinar on ipspace.net. I think I mentioned that like 3 times, right? Anyway... in switches that support multiple tables, not every table can do everything. So the first table may match on anything, the second table may match only on MAC addresses, the third table may match only on destination IP addresses, and the first table could set DSCP, the second table could set VLAN tag, and the third table could set destination MAC address.
Yes.
And the way the controller deals with this stupidity, because now every switch looks different, is there is a message in OpenFlow standard where the controller can say, "Hey, switch, could you please tell me how many tables you have, what you can match in each table, and what you can set in each table?" And so the controller now knows what the switch can do. and the guy programming the controller has this wonderful task of rewriting the same stupidity 20 times to cater to 20 switches with different forwarding implementations. Which is why no one has ever done that.
Yeah, so that was the downside of 1.3 that I was talking about, yeah.
Yes. And now what you're saying is, well, actually, we turned those messages that everyone thought were read-only into read-write messages, and guess what? If the switch agrees with that, the controller can actually reconfigure the switching pipeline.
Yes, on the fly.
Yes.
So
is it actually reconfiguration of the pipeline, or is it just smart mapping between what the controller wishes and what the switch can do?
It's not software. Mm-hmm. It's we have basically, the best way to describe it are kind of, we have 10 lightweight NPUs in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And are completely network processing.
Okay.
So network processors, they can, it ends up we can have an absurd number of tables. So I think last time I talked to the ASIC guys, they were saying up to 32 TCAM tables or 32 hash tables. And then there's a few other table types. Mm-hmm. And you can mix and match what you want each one of those tables to match on. And they all have complete access to all the actions. So all the actions from any table.
So any table can perform any action.
Yes.
And for people who don't get what the difference between TCAM and hash table is, TCAM can match on any fields in the packet. And you can say, I don't care about these bits.
Yeah, it's got wildcards.
Yeah. So even though you could match on source and destination IP addresses and source and MAC addresses and TCP port numbers, one entry could match only on the destination MAC address, and the other entry could match only on the source IP address, and the third entry could match on the source IP address and destination MAC address and TCP port number.
Or half the IP, IP subnet.
Yeah, or prefix or whatever. So TCAMs, they're like ECLs.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you can do with PBR and ECLs, that's what's done in TCAM.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're matching on a fixed value, like destination MAC address or destination IP address with no subnet mask, there are easier ways of doing that, which are the hash tables.
Right.
You take the value, you do some magic on it, you get some magic number, you look into the table to see whether there's an entry at that magic position of the table. There's an entry, we got a match. There's no entry, we don't have a match.
Exactly. And so we now have those tables where you can define both what you want to match on and the actions you want in a table, and you can put the table wherever you want in the pipeline.
So theoretically, I could use a hash table to match on /64 prefixes in IPv6.
Yeah. Yep.
Or no I problem. Could use a different hash table to match on /128 in IPv6, which would be my host routes.
Yep.
Or I could use a different hash table to match on my MPLS labels.
We don't do MPLS, but yeah.
Well, you haven't implemented
exactly. If you, yeah. Yeah, so you could put, as long as you know the bit positions.
Yeah, so you could match on the ether type.
Yep.
Yeah, this is MPLS.
Now punt it to this table.
Now punt to this other table, which matches on hash value on some weird position of bits, which happens to be MPLS label.
Yep.
And then you do some action like squeeze the packet, so you're popping the label.
Yeah. Squeeze the packet.
And we're back to reinventing the wheel.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
But so the interesting thing about this, and pipelines are, there's good and evil, right? Mm-hmm. We've covered the evil, I think. The good is that it really does allow you to do things you can't do with a single table, right? And mm-hmm. and you mentioned that before. You can't do multiple actions. You start to have to recirculate. It gets ugly. And so having a pipeline where I can do things like, I want to get copies of packets, you do that up front. Send me a copy of things. The next stage, I want to do an inline inspection. So I want to decide, take it off somewhere else, do an inspection, send it back. The next one I want to do drops.
So
the next one is I want to do QoS.
And redirection, right?
Yeah, but you want to break up these tables mm-hmm. so you have different sure. functionality at the yeah. right line in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you need a new table, with this ASIC, you can slap in a new table on the fly. You can have multiple pipelines for different connections. You can have multiple pipelines for different VLANs. You can, it's It's really rewriting the way you think about using OpenFlow on a device.
So you could actually, yeah, of course, you have the VLAN table first, you match on VLAN,
and you split
and
to two
based
different.
On the VLAN tag, you split to different tables, and in one VLAN you do layer 2 lookup,
yep.
and the other VLAN you do layer 3 lookup, and the other VLAN you do layer IPv6 only lookup,
yep. mm-hmm.
and the fourth VLAN you do DSCP-based lookup, which makes perfect sense,
yep.
or not.
Yeah. So the other table I didn't mention, mm-hmm. right, it's basically a lookup table.
Mm-hmm.
And it attaches metadata. So we can also have these tables match on metadata.
Which are values you attach to the packet as it is in the pipeline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so one way to use this is to create MAC groups. So you have a table that does a hash on source MAC, and it goes into a lookup table, and you give it a tag, like group 5. And so every...
Like these are the bad guys.
What?
Like
the bad guys.
Or
the good guys, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And then later on in the pipeline, you can say, anybody in group 5, do this to them. And so now you can create MAC groups on the fly that you can apply different policy, blacklist, whitelist, whatever you want.
So this could very easily tie back
to VLAN.
Yeah.
Active Directory groups,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So we could use that function to say this group of executives gets
lower.
Low priority.
Low priority
which is going to get me new devices, right? More budget.
Yeah. So it's... So, yeah, I've had love-hate relationship with OpenFlow over the years, and I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years, and I liked it, I didn't like it, I like it. I think we're finally starting to mature a little bit. I think what we're doing with it in OpenFlow and this switch is just, it's taking the restrictions that we had and throwing them out. It doesn't get rid of the issue you were talking about with the explosion of different table pipelines, but now... If you want me to look like another pipeline, fine. I will look like that pipeline for you.
Yeah, so first, you can adapt to what the controller wants to see.
Yep.
You still have the physical limitation that you can only fit so many flows in a TCAM because TCAM also, TCAM still has a limited size.
Yep.
You can only fit so many things in a hash table because a hash table has fixed size. So we haven't removed the... maximum limits,
yep.
they are still there,
yep.
but we got way, way more flexible in what we can do.
Yeah, and how we can use them. So there's a TCAM on this ASIC that is 4K.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in this pipeline. This pipeline has its own 4K or 8K, depending on how wide you want to match. You can get up to 8K entries in the pipeline.
With bit patterns and 4K with long bit patterns.
Yeah. If you do the full 12 tuple, I think you get about 2K.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's the full 12 tuple match in TCAM.
Including destination and source MAC addresses and IP addresses and TCP port numbers and IPv6 extension headers.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Lots. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on chip, we've got 64K hash entries.
Mm-hmm.
You can go off chip. That does affect performance.
Of course.
And but then I think we've got another 128K off chip. And so you create these pipelines to... And when you define the tables, you define on-chip, off-chip, TCAM hash, size, what you want to match on, the actions.
So it looks like, from table size perspective, like any modern high-end switch.
But that's per ASIC. Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes you have to install the same rule into multiple ASICs. So don't get me started on F2 line cards in Nexus 7000 and 16K MAC addresses.
Yeah.
Okay. So table sizes are okay. They won't solve all the problems that we have been ranting about. And the solutions to those problems are creative applications that we described in the previous podcast.
Yeah.
But this thing actually allows you to do packet forwarding any way you want to do it.
Yeah.
Which is way cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much more expensive is this stuff compared to other ASICs in the market?
So this, I don't think we changed the price from the V2. So I don't think there's a price jump at all. I mean, if you go for the 40 gig, it's probably,
yeah. Yeah, that's a different story.
It's a different story.
Yeah, no, this is still that kind
it's
of
the same price range anyway. I don't know if it's plus a couple hundred or what.
The marketing would call it a value leader play. You know, so it's still that same kind of pro curve, limited lifetime, lifetime warranty included, all that kind of stuff that you've traditionally known is still all there. But there's all these other cool capabilities that are really, like, I started looking at this going, what do you mean you can move the pipeline around?
On the fly?
this is so nerdy.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the interesting thing is, you want to do a new application, you're like, if only I had a table there. Boom, you got a table there. I've been trying to draw a box around what you can and can't do, and it's really difficult to define what I can't do.
The best thing from your perspective, once someone's get addicted to it, they can only buy ProCurve switches because this is the only switch that supports that so far.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I'm more interested in the apps. So I also do the SDN apps. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm really excited about being able to do what I want in an application. Before, we've built our applications around the existing pipelines and their limitations. And it's really trying at times.
The existing pipelines suck, but I think that we've at least, you know, we've done what engineers do. We've figured out what the constraints were. And we figured out creative ways of dealing with them to do interesting things that hopefully add value of some kind.
Right? Exactly.
Absolutely.
But yeah, they sucked.
Couldn't agree more.
So hybrid networking, the other podcast, we covered that. And I think that along with these table sizes and flexibility just gives you, it's starting to really see like SDN is actually going to do something useful and interesting. So I'm incredibly excited.
Let's reclassify that. OpenFlow-based SDN on physical switches is getting more exciting.
Yes.
There are all these other things that are rightfully called SDN, even though ONF disagrees.
Yeah.
But we are talking about OpenFlow-based SDN on physical
boxes.
Yes.
When are you shipping this thing?
May 1st, is that today? Or Friday?
I think, Yeah, it's...
So they're, like, out.
Yeah.
They will be out before this podcast is published. Now for people who actually want to listen to the marketing message, what are you launching?
So this is the 5400R, the ProVision V3 blades, and I think they're all marked V3 according to the product names. And that's basically it. I think you said 10 different models.
Yeah, they've got some 20 port 1 gig for... Plus 410, we've got an 8 port 10, we've got a 2 port 40. I think all the 10 gig ports do 1, 2.5, 5, or 10. So the smart rate for APs.
Yeah, smart rate, so 2.5 gigs. MagSec on the blades. So this is the 5400R, not to be confused with the 5400, which is the previous chassis generation. Mm-hmm. So we spun the chassis last year.
Yeah.
And so you need the new chassis to...
You need the new chassis for the new blades, but the new chassis will take the V2 from the old chassis. Mm-hmm. So there is that great investment protection.
It's a bridge, yeah.
I think that's about as much as marketing as I want to get today.
And it's just the 5400 chassis switch?
For now, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Any future plans that you cannot tell me about?
Of course, there are tons of future plans I cannot tell you about. Right? There is some stuff internally... I will tell you, my nerd meter just goes off the roof looking at some of, and I'm like, Craig is looking at me going, don't say it. Yeah, where's he going with this? I've seen stuff from the labs that just, it blows my mind. The things that we were having to look at, really monolithic, reassuringly expensive appliances that now, because of programmable pipeline, we have the ability to start pushing some stuff out to the edges of the network, and I'll let your mind wander on that one. Right? There's all this great stuff that are the capabilities that we have that we just scratched the surface, and it still operates like a normal network except for this exception-based forwarding. Right? That to me, that's the biggest thing that I love about our approach, is it still respects that OSPF still works the way it always did. ARP still
does what
it does.
Oh, don't tell that to Greg, please.
Yeah, I told him. I told him he was fine with it. He was okay. There's some things that we could reinvent for sure, but for now, you know, there's the other aspect of all of this, which is the people problem, is that operational, right? And that's a whole different. That's a completely different ballgame.
Okay, so when you are allowed to blow off my mind, let me know, and we'll record on a podcast.
Absolutely.
Yep.
In the meantime, where can people learn more about what you have just launched?
So hp.com/networking. I am almost positive the splash page is will be there in the next couple of days. 5400R. And again, all the SDN stuff is hp.com/go/SDN or /networking/SDN. Either one. We get beat up all the time for these ridiculously annoying long URLs.
Yes. HP's big.
hp.com/networking/SDN will get you there. Right.
Perfect.
That's all you need to remember.
What do I have to type in to get to you guys?
So for me, Twitter is the definitely. I have an email address somewhere, but it's like everybody else's, fills up with stuff that I don't look at. So at NetmanChris on Twitter is definitely the best way to get a hold of me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at NeatNets at Twitter. So.
Perfect. And if you're new to the podcast, I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I'm at iOS Hints on Twitter. You can read my rants on blog.ipspace.net. And if you're interested in SDN, it looks like you are. Otherwise, you wouldn't survive till the end of this podcast. There's tons of resources at sdn.ipspace.net, including links to episodes of Software Gone Wild, which is the podcast you've just been listening to. Thank you for this time. It's been great. I really enjoyed it. And when you have something new, let me know.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Excellent.